With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Rick Mon is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, yes, yes. 25th of April, 2024, TNT, today's News Talk. What a show it's been so far. Hey, I feel all energized and I'm only at the halfway mark. Hopefully you've been listening in wherever you're listening in from and you've been enjoying it too. And if you have been enjoying it, tell a friend, even tell someone you hate, just tell people about TNT because I believe, personally speaking, it's the best kept secret in the whole world right now. But like any good secret, sooner or later, it's going to get out there. And when it get out there, it's going to spread like wildfire. People are going to be talking about us, tuning in, watching us in the billions. At the minute, it's probably in the hundreds of millions, in the low billions right now. But we want a listenership of at least 6.5 to 7 billion people a day. And I believe we're going to get there. We're going to get there, but we're going to get there one person at a time. And you could be the difference between us getting there and not. So tell people about us. Buy those TNT socks. Buy those TNT underpants. Yes, and advertise TNT. Woo, what's coming up this morning? Well, we've already had half a show. This hour, I'm going to be talking to Gemma again. Looking forward to that. Johnny Vedmore is going to be hopping in to the Locked and Loaded boudoir this morning at about 20 past. And then to finish it all off today, Jane Black, always lovely to talk to Jane Black. She's going to be joining us from the Glens of Antrim, one of the most beautiful parts of all of Ireland. She's going to be tuning in from there this morning. And we're going to be looking at what's happening here domestically in Northern Ireland or the north of Ireland. Call it whatever you like. So I'm looking around. I'm seeing little snippets here and there. I was talking to Jason Leo Satos yesterday, just picking apart some of the little positive comments that he had been making on social media. There's another one popped up this morning from Paul Kudnack, who runs Winter Oak Press. And this is actually a quote that he's quoted somebody else for, a lady called Corey Morningstar, who's based up in Canada. And she says, just a little reminder for us this morning, humans have survived successfully for millennia without mobile phones. Amen to that. And all we require for our survival is healthy food, clean water, sanitation, and shelter. And as social animals, we seek physical community, companionship, joy and love. And that's where those music festivals come in. And if you're like me, yes, I'll take the clean water, the healthy food, the sanitation and shelter, but I'll pass on the physical community, companionship, joy and love. But the point that I'm going to make here is people are terrified. What happens if the internet goes down? What happens if we can't get online? What happens if this? Listen, we've been around for millennia with no mobile phones. There's been revolutions in the past with no mobile phones. Wars have been won in the past with no mobile phones. Okay, so we use them. Don't let them use you. But don't worry too much about it if things get shut down, because we've always got people, real physical people, inhabiting a real physical world there. So that's a little timely reminder of that from Corey Morningstar. What else am I seeing here this morning? I saw a brilliant video clip last night, actually, of I'm not a football fan at all, but Alex Ferguson. There was a clip of Alex Ferguson from before he went to Manchester United. And he's a dour old Scotsman, as Alex Ferguson, you know, he very rarely smiles. And he had just been interviewed after winning the Scottish Cup with Aberdeen. And you would have thought he would have been over the moon. And he was absolutely livid. He was furious. And then when he was asked, congratulations, Alex, on winning the Scottish Cup, you must be so proud. He says, I'm absolutely disgusted. He said, our team sucked. We're the luckiest football team in the world. He said, there were two players out there that beat Rangers tonight. The rest of the team were a shambles and a disgrace, and I'm absolutely disgusted with them. I just thought it was a brilliant interview, because you can tell in his eyes, he's just won the Scottish Cup. The team's on top of the world, and he's absolutely disgusted. Why? because he has standards that he wanted to live up to, and he felt that the team fell well short of the standards that day. And the only reason why they won that day was by luck, and luck alone, and two players, one called Miller and one called McLeish. So he gave props to two of his team. The other nine he wrote off, and he was absolutely disgusted. And then I went through some of the comments in that thread, and people were putting other videos up of him. I'm going to watch some of his early interviews later on tonight on YouTube, because when he went to Manchester United, very famously, you know, he won so many titles, I think 13 Premiership titles. But his first 2 years were terrible. Terrible, and he has a little diary. He was going through a little diary, wrote, disgusting performance. We sucked, absolutely abysmal. And they were chanting, go home, go back to Scotland, you suck. Get rid of Alex Ferguson for the first 2 years that he was at Man U. I didn't know that, but then, of course, he went on to become arguably one of the greatest football managers of all time. So anyway, what am I saying here? Persistence. Be persistent and don't let your standards drop. Even if you get a win, if it's a crappy win or if it's just a fluky win, don't think that it's a great accomplishment. Assess yourself and say, you know, where was the team? Where was the effort? Where was the standards there? Anyway, it's worth watching that if you haven't already seen it. I'm looking at his little miserable face now, and his eyes are just black. He's furious with his team after they won the Scottish Cup. But anyway, that was the news back in 1984 or something like that. We need to get some more up-to-date stuff happening. We need to fast forward 40 years here, and that's what we're going to do with Gemma Cooper. So don't go away. We'll be right back here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Covering the latest news from 1984. Gemma, that's me. What do you think of that?
Well, there's a salutary lesson in there. Never mess with a former Glaswegian ship worker, and he was shop steward at Glaswegian shipyards, wasn't he? He's not going to mess about with a few namby-pamby footballers. He's a tough lad, Alex Ferguson. Shame is, of course, you wouldn't get the chance now in football. I'm not a massive fan, but it's so cutthroat and corporate that, you know, it's almost like not even three strikes and you're out. It's like one or two bad games, you're out. You wouldn't get a chance to bed in. You wouldn't get a chance to build relationships. You wouldn't get a chance to get a feel for the club, you know? It's all gone, all that kind of like proving yourself in the role, because the corporate culture, the money it talks, it owns everything, including performance. Shame, really, because he was a legend.
He was no dozer. There was I'll send you this. I'll actually send you the link to this through, and you can peruse it yourself. There's some gems on here, but they had one of his old players, Steve Bruce, was on, and apparently United were going to play. And I'm not a football fan at all, but this guy's thinking really is inspirational. Steve Bruce was being interviewed, and they were going to play an FA Cup final against Chelsea. And Ferguson said, if we score the first goal, we will win by at least 4-0, maybe 5-0. And he was saying that every day coming up to practice. And Steve Bruce went to him and said, boss, why are you saying that? How do you know that if we score the first goal, we'll end up winning 4-0? And he said, this is why. He says, because Glenn Hoddle is the manager of Chelsea, the player manager. He says, if they lose the first goal, he will substitute himself onto the pitch. And when he doesn't have the legs for it anymore, certainly not for an FA Cup final at Wembley. And he's a midfielder. And he says, if he comes on after we score first, which he will do, we will run clean through their midfield and destroy them. He said, okay. So the match happens. And after 62 minutes, United score the first goal. What happens next? Pan to Glenn Hoddle. He takes off his top and he substitutes himself back on. And the United team were all looking at each other going, this is what the skipper said. And in the next 4 minutes, they went on to score 4 goals. So everything played out exactly as Fergie had said, because he knew how to read the pitch and he knew how to look deeper than what was on the surface. Hell's bells, we need a few more Fergie types in the world, don't we? Not just in football, I'm talking about in the world in general, don't we?
Absolutely. And that's what I mean, you know, knowing the craft and bedding in, studying other teams, how they will perform against your particular team, and not just being shoved around by the billionaire managers, billionaire owners, club owners, and their billionaire sponsors. And, you know, we won't see his like again, because the conditions aren't there to let a Ferguson flourish. You know, there's no way a manager now will be given 2 years to prove themselves. 2 weeks. two months at most. So that's a great story. And the power of predictive programming there. And knowing it, it's a great story. It's a bit like magic, actually, that story. It's great.
I'll send you through it. And like I said, it just caught my eye last night. And I'm not a football fan. I'm not a Manchester United fan. But the principles of what he was doing and the principles of his mindset, I believe, apply to what's happening in the world now. And we need to get inspiration from people like him, and also gritting it out in the first few years in Man U. He chose his little Let's diary that he had put his own handwriting in, and his wife was on being interviewed, said, used to get phone calls to the house saying, "We hate you, go home, go back to Scotland." And they were chanting at Old Trafford, "Go home, Fergie, go home, Fergie." And then, of course, he started to win trophies. And guess what happened? Everybody shut up and started kissing his ass. So that seems to be the way of it as well. Just persevere with it and you'll get there. But anyway, enough of 1984 Manchester United football. Talk to me about today's breaking news, please.
Well, obviously, Scotland has broken this morning the story that Hamza Youssef, First Minister, has pulled out of the historic power-sharing arrangement he's had with the Green Party. It all follows a kind of new turn from the Scottish Parliament on their emissions targets, net zero, and also the gender clinic, the only one in Scotland, off the back of the CAS review, saying it will now stop prescribing puberty blockers. Parts of the Green Party weren't happy with those policy reversals, and there was going to be a vote on whether to stay working with the SNP. Today, the SNP has got in there first and said, "We're breaking up with you." And he's been defending his decision and saying he's not on his way out. There'll be no confidence votes. He's taking control. So a lot of headlines surrounding that. You just talked there earlier about mobile phones and the reliance on tech. Yet another story about yet another tech outage affecting a corporation. Sainsbury's once again left customers stranded this morning without any deliveries. Thousands of customers in the UK. It's back online now, but of course it follows a spate of corporate glitches on tech. And only last month, Sainsbury's had to cancel thousands of deliveries over a weekend, leaving people without food. Just again, warnings this morning, this afternoon now here in the UK about reliance on tech and living your entire life through a digital vehicle. And also controversial in Europe now, another European destination from today has introduced a tourist charge. Venice is the latest European city to charge visitors in an attempt to combat serious overcrowding. €5 a day from today, people have to pay to get into the historic Italian city. It's not going down very well. We've got people patrolling the streets of Venice, doing spot checks on people. Fines are between €50 and €300. It's the latest in a spate of cities introducing a tourist tax. Barcelona, Amsterdam, and the Canary Islands, where there have been a spate of protests over the last few days about tourism. It's beginning to look a little bit like stopping people traveling, stopping people moving around. Already, many British people have said they are going to boycott any country that continues to impose these tourist taxes. But Venice is the latest from today, €5 to get in.
€5 to get into Venice, eh? And I mean, if you go at the right time of the year, it can be a very, very beautiful place. If you go at the height of tourist season, you know, I wouldn't pay €5 to go there at the height of tourist season. I've been once, I don't know if you've been to Venice before. It's a breathtaking place. It's a beautiful place. The ice cream is beyond. The pizzas are fantastic. Never mind the architecture and the culture. The ice cream and the pizza is like nothing you've ever had before. Maybe worth €5 for that alone, Gemma. But during the summer months, it's bunged, as they say in Northern Ireland. Everybody and their dog is in Venice, and the canals stink to high heavens as well, and the price of everything goes up through the roof. So maybe, like most things, if you pick your timing in Venice, you might have a more pleasurable experience there. But of course, most people's lives in the Matrix revolve around, you know, the school holidays or half term or Easter or the beginning of the year. Everybody takes their holidays at the same kind of time, which of course puts a lot of pressure on hotel availability, flight prices, and so on and so forth. Maybe we actually need to be thinking more about when we go to these places rather than if we go to these places.
Well, I think you're right, though. We're so shackled to the matrix. All countries are, really, in terms of school holidays, you know, when you can take your kids out of school. Although I do think more and more people in the UK are bucking that trend and just saying, "I'll take my own children out of school whenever I like. Thank you very much." It's still cheaper to pay the school fine than it is to go to these places in peak season. I mean, looking at the photographs, there's no doubt what you say is right, Rick. I've never been to Venice, but the crowds look almost, you know, unbearable over tiny little Italian bridges. And, you know, it's quite a fragile infrastructure there. there anyway, being built on water. But it's interesting that it's the latest European city, that there seems to be an explosion of cities right across Europe saying, right, if you want to come, you've got to pay. And the Canary Islands, massive destination for British people, the Canaries. We love the Canaries, don't we? It's just not too hot, not too cold, you know, just right. We're a bit fussy about our weather. They're protesting and saying no more tourists. Freeze on tourism. Now, it's all come kind of very fast. It's all come out of nowhere. Lots of European cities doing this at the same time. Is this part of something engineered? You could argue possibly. A lot of travel companies reporting today how many British people won't travel to places now where you have to pay. I'm sure British tourists aren't the only ones thinking, well, I don't want to pay that. I won't go. Is this a very, like a little slick way of stopping us traveling and stopping us moving around and mixing with different cultures? I don't know, but I'm always suspicious when things come out of nowhere and lots of different organizations or countries adopt it at the same time, much like 4 years ago. So it could be a little bit of Agenda 2030 there, you know, let's not travel. But certainly five euros to get into Venice. A lot of people today didn't even know. So they're being nicked on the streets, being fined on the spot fines. And a lot of it has got to be done through QR codes and smartphones, again, pushing us down an agenda which we didn't particularly ask for. So one to watch with interest. Will London be next? It's not that overcrowded, but it does get busy. Who knows? Could be.
I think as well, the people that will hurt the most are the traders and the people that are relying on tourists for business, much the same way as we saw hospitality and tourism absolutely destroyed during the scandemic. That's what we're seeing now with the clampdown on tourists, because I'm pretty sure the traders don't want to discourage people from coming to Venice or going to the Canaries or going to these places. A lot of bars, restaurants, they rely on the tourist trade to stay open, much the same as when the footfall stopped in the major cities during the scandemic years. You saw all the small businesses closed, the little coffee shops closed, the little independent coffee shops closed. There were people over in Belfast from England at the weekend. I people that I know from social media, I picked them up, I took them into Belfast city centre. We walked the length and breadth of it. We could not find a single independent coffee shop because they've all closed in the last 3 years since I was last in the city centre, because the footfall is down so much. So I believe the traders are also being targeted here, Gemma. And of course, if you're a trader, you're self-employed, and if you're self-employed, you're more financially independent, and we can't have financial independence in this new world order. Hell no. Everyone has to do what they're told and be good little matrix dwellers, as you would call them, which is a great title. It's not a very nice one, but very apt one nonetheless. So yeah, I think they're being targeted as well. So we've got to pause now and release you back into the matrix again, or the non-matrix. Maybe you can go and pack some bits and pieces for Glastonbury, your little rainbow flag. I don't know what you're going to put in your suitcase, but we'll talk again tomorrow morning, all being well, here on TNT Unlocked and Loaded. So I'm joking, of course. She's not really going to bring her rainbow flag, but yeah, or maybe she will. I don't know. But listen, it's all good, Gemma. It's been a blast talking to you as always. And that we shall talk again in the morning. Johnny Vedmore's incoming here. So stay tuned for more on TNT, today's news talk.
TNT's Chris Smith.
There should be a maintenance of free speech, and we shouldn't have to risk free speech because we are unable to handle someone's criticism or can't handle someone else's news story that happens to be violent. We've long since been desensitized by this stuff. Now, whether that's a good thing, I'm not saying whether it's a good thing. Whether it's a bad thing, I'm not saying that either. It's what we have been used to. But in countries like Australia right now, they are pulling certain news pieces, footage that we would normally see, they're pulling that footage from social media, or they'll fine the social media platforms $785,000 a day.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
It sounds pretty good.
It sounds real, dude.
Not bad, huh?
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, you better believe it. It is today's News Talk. It is Thursday, the 25th of April, 2024. This is Locked and Loaded. What a show it's been so far. Talking about all sorts here. And who's on the mic as per right now? Beaming in today, the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Johnny Vedmore. Johnny, welcome back to Locked and Loaded. How are you this fine day? And happy birthday, by the way. I don't know if you wanted to keep that secret or not, but there's no chance of that when you're on my show. Happy birthday.
Ah, thank you very much, my man. Yeah, I was born on a Thursday on the 25th of April, but a long time ago, you know, 21 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, plus VAT and capital gains tax and inheritance premium tax. Yeah, I get it. But welcome back. It's nice to see you again. First, the last time you were actually on here, you were just kicking off the Johnny Vedmore show on TNT. And of course, if you don't know this or not, if you're an uninitiated and an ignoramus, Johnny has got his own show here on TNT, the Johnny Vedmore show. It's on weekdays, Monday through Friday. Is the time zone with the time changes at 4 to 6 or 5 to 7 now for your
5
show?
To 7, 5 to 7 okay. Now, yeah.
5 to 7. Well, update that little Twitter profile of yours. It's still showing us a 4 p.m. GMT kickoff. So we must take steps to rectify that miss and dis and malinformation there, Johnny, on your social media pages. But are you finding it so far? Might as well just throw that out there. Are you still enthusiastic or have they kicked that clean out of you?
No, I'm super enthusiastic. I've met some really amazing people. I mean, I'm trying to create something out of this, which is, you know, we each have our chance to form our shows into the way we want them. We're given free rein. We're given the right to say what we like and have on who we like. So I'm trying to build up a good platform of speakers, commentators who I believe describe the world in the best way possible, can give us, you know, some sort of understanding about what's really going on. But a lot of the time, you know, it's all when you start off something like this is stepping stones. You take the next step. And, you know, you gave me good advice at the start. You said to take the first couple of days as they come, take the first week as it comes, and then it'll just roll. And that's exactly what's happened. The first week and a half was really hard, you know, really taxing, getting used to the routine of waking up and, you know, preparing for the shows, writing things up. But it's also like, you know, trying to focus, trying to create something that has a feel and a look, and also has like, you know, an energy to it, because I want to be there bringing people, folks who they might not find elsewhere, and, you know, trying to just get a little bit of this information out there to the world. And I got such a great fan base out there who are supporting me on here. So it's been brilliant, man. Brilliant.
You know, just to steer people your way, Johnny is a writer. He's a proper investigative journalist, founder of newspace.com, johnnyvedmore.com. And I want to focus in on this business of journalism. I was on a podcast for a chap a couple of days ago. He's based in Mexico, and he was describing me as a journalist, and somebody else on a podcast described me in that the other day. And I said, listen, I ain't no journalist, okay? At best, I am me. I am a commentator. I react to stories that other people bring, and I react to research that other people have done. And I was lamenting and mourning the lack of genuine, solid, independent research journalism out there. Now, you are one of the people that I would classify as a proper investigative research journalist, and I know you're trying to tailor the content of your show to bring more people on of that caliber. I think that's a good thing, Johnny, because I think there's too many reactionaries out there, or too many people that are taking other people's words for it when it comes to certain stories. There's a dearth, I believe, of genuine, honest to God, independent journalism out there right now. It exists, but it's becoming increasingly scarce. Would you agree with that, or am I being too pessimistic and cynical?
Well, it's actually quite interesting you talk about that, because I had Adi Ads on yesterday, who's another, I mean, he describes what some of what we're doing as well at the moment as meta journalism, because really what we're doing is we've got to the point where we've noticed this. Okay, so if you're a journalist and you're a proper investigative journalist, you spend, like, some of my articles, I research multiple articles at the same time, and some of them take a year to develop, a year to research, a year to understand. You know, I really put in a lot of time, a lot of effort, and we know that there's a lot of people out there who just take other people's information, stick it out there and put their own face on it and act like, you know, oh, this is me, I'm bringing you information. But they don't really, they're not really the diggers, the journalists. And then when you look into those journalists, those supposed journalists, they're actually paid by this company or that company to pretend to be a journalist.
Yeah.
And we've started looking into the funding patterns of journalists as well. Because when you're in this game, you know, you spend a lot of time in the same pools as people who you're like, oh, he's a journalist, I'm going to speak to him. Or she's a journalist, I'm going to speak to her. And then you talk to them and you realize, oh, wait a minute. They don't actually know anything, and they haven't done any research, and I don't understand. I thought they were a journalist. And you know, there's so many different levels of journalism. There's so many different. So I'm an investigative reporter. And when people, like investigative journalists, when people, you know, say, oh, I'm an investigative journalist, what they often mean is that they just look at something and then they say it out loud. But, you know, there's a point. I go deep diving. I go deep into the history. I try and look at the nuts and bolts of what makes us human and what combines us and what brings us together. And that is a rare quality nowadays, and something that I stumbled upon. I didn't even know that was me. It was just I developed who I was, and it turned out I was an investigative journalist.
And you are. That's what I mean. I have to give you props for that. You know, whenever anybody labels me with that, the J word, I can't accept that, because I'm not a journalist, you know, and I don't do those deep dives. Call it laziness, say maybe I'm too old for that stuff and I'm focused on other things. But I like to talk to people like yourself who have done the work. And I'm not saying, you know, you do the work and then I'll talk to you about it. But what I mean is I give place to people that have invested a lot of time and effort and in terms, many times, their own money into bringing this information there. And then I present them to other people and say, look, this guy's done his homework. This woman knows what's going on with this topic and this topic. And I think that's what's important, Johnny. We need to get good, solid people on that we're talking to on a daily basis, especially here on TNT, because there's so much garbage out there and so many faux and pseudo journalists out there. It's nice to speak to the real deal as often as possible. We've got to take a little break as per right now. When we come back at the other side, I want to look at, you know, again, in the norm, are we bringing news stories to the table, or are we simply reacting to stimuli that has been put out there by the so-called mainstream media? You know, are we just little puppets, little marionettes at their behest dancing to their tune or not? Let's look at that when we come back after this news break here on TNT, today's news talk.
Newsflash!
Now,
come on, let's go!
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Tensions over Israel's war in Gaza have flared in America, with riot police clashing with students at colleges and universities across the country. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has responded to the uprising, demanding authorities do more to shut it down.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific.
And it's been revealed the US secretly shipped a batch of long-range missiles to Ukraine, which have been used to strike a Russian airfield.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, I'm speaking live, uncensored, unscripted, and all that jazz here this morning with the one and only Johnny Vedmore, host of the Johnny Vedmore Show here on TNT, Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. UK time. Do the mathematics. If you don't live in the UK, what time zone that will be for you. Johnny, one thing I am doing is I'm stepping back. I'm thinking about things. I'm looking at, you know, the way the alternate, so-called alternative media is playing out at the minute. And undoubtedly, there has been a huge rise in the so-called alternate media, the truther community, over the last few years to react to the old legacy mainstream media. But on the journalism front, okay, following on, because I'm just thinking out loud about stuff I've been pondering here. When I said about a dearth of genuine nuts and bolts, real bona fide journalists, they will bring news stories to the table, or they will have an agenda that they want to push based on their research rather than reacting to whatever stimuli is actually thrown out there in front of them. So just thinking off the top of my head, in the last few weeks, we've seen so much airtime devoted to, for example, the royal family in the UK, the Kate Middleton Photoshop pictures, the dodgy AI-esque video that she made, the cancer diagnosis, the disappearance of Charles, this, that, and the other. To me, it was obvious that that was, you know, a blind man, you know, on a galloping horse could have seen that those pictures weren't legit. But then people discovered that they were faked, and then they thought, hey, I'm smart. I've debunked some dodgy PR coming out of Kensington Palace or whoever's doing that. They knew fine rightly what they were doing. I mean, like if people can just pick that up at a glance, they would have known that. Kate took the pictures. Her Photoshop skills weren't good. And all of a sudden, everywhere you turn, you've got this story. Yesterday, it was horses galloping down London, a white one and a black one. And is it occultish? Is it symbolic? Is it imminent death? Is it going to do a false flag? People have found crisis horses for sale or for hire that looked like the horses that were galloping down London. Was it fake blood? Was it not? Again, is that not just something that's thrown out there for us to react to distract us from other things that we maybe should be focused on? Or am I being too harsh?
No, you're completely right. I mean, it's all reactionary nowadays. And when I started off in journalism, that's when I wanted to report on things properly. And I went out there and I said, what should I report on? And I looked around and I was instantly affected by that stimuli you're talking about. You know, those purposely placed stories that emote you and so make you react to something and make you say, oh, it must be this or it must be that. And what they're doing is keeping you like a soap opera, a useless soap opera within a drama, just circling round in a script, a scripted drama. They script it, you react. It's like a theatre show. They show the theatre show, we all howl and boo at the right times on cue. And the fact is that that's not journalism at all, because journalism, you don't know where the stories are. You've got to go. I found that I went into a flood of information when I first started, and I was like, I want to report on this that everybody's talking about. Oh no, everybody's talking about it. How am I going to get any air? What am I going to do? And then you just try and report about it in a different way, and suddenly you're changing style, you're changing the way you are, you're changing you to fit the model of what they've created. And you don't have to do that. What you do is say, I'm going to ignore all that. I'm going to look at the issue and then I'm going to explore it. And once I find something in there that really makes me go, wait a minute, no one's noticed that, I'm going to follow that down. I'm going to follow this lead. And before you know it, you find an explanation to why they keep you on those puppet strings. You find a reason why these people just keep you just always constantly emoting. Wait, just they show you a picture, they show you a bloody horse running through London, everybody's going apocalypse, and you're suddenly shouting apocalypse about that and not about the actual apocalypse that they're creating through neocon wars of perpetual limited warfare all around the world that could lead us to mutually assured destruction. You know, the real apocalypse is what they're trying to avoid you looking at by showing you images that make you believe that, oh, this is real, this isn't real. And of course, this is partially fifth generation warfare. This is going to boost up. But if you're a journalist, if you're an independent journalist, if you're an investigative journalist, you've got to say, okay, wipe away all of the stuff that I'm reading in the mainstream, all of the things that are currently on TV, all of those things. Let's start at the base. What do I care about? What do I believe in? Who do I find suspicious? Why do I find them suspicious? And you've got to do something. You've got to be like water. You've got to be like water as a journalist. You've got to just flow through, not stop. You cannot stop on the first thing you find. You stop on the first thing you find, you found nothing. You find what's written in the press. You find what someone else has written. You find a bit of information. You just keep going and going. And as you go down and follow these threads, you'll come across more and more information that'll make you say, oh, wait a minute, I'm seeing the big picture. I'm seeing the proper story. I try and explain to people how easy my journalism is. I look for someone, for instance, like someone like, say, Laura Koonsberg, Theresa May, Klaus Schwab, all of these people that I've looked into before. I look at them. I look at all, I put all of the information I can find in chronological order. I write it all down and the story forms itself. Mm-hmm. I don't get to add anything, and it's wrong for me to add anything. At the end, I say, this is my opinion about this story that is just all of the facts in chronological order. That is literally all you have to do to be a good journalist. But people don't do that. They get to the end, they see the end, and they report the end. They don't report the river and how the water gets to the place that that is like the estuary, the where we are, where everything just looks like a flood. Well, follow the river back and tell the story of how that flows. Tell the story of every rock. Tell the story of every embankment. And what you get is a proper piece of journalism. And that's what I try and do with all my work nowadays.
Lovely analogy, by the way, using the water analogy there, the rivers, the estuaries, the embankments. Also worth noting that water, you know, when you see it going over a rock, doesn't look like it's having any effect on that rock. But if it flows over that rock for long enough, it starts to erode, you know, even a rock. And I think persistence is very important as well, Johnny. It can be easy to quit and throw the towel in and just, you know, lose inspiration, but you've got to be persistent as well, because if you keep applying that pressure over time, what's the old adage, that pressure plus time equals diamonds, you know? So I think we'll have to be persistent, relentless in what we're doing here at the minute. And that last time we spoke was what, March? Now we're in towards May. So the first day did turn into the first week, which turned into the first month. And before you know it, you'll have been doing this, fingers crossed, for a year, 2 years. And, you know, you'll just keep that flow going as well. So listen, I'd love to talk a little bit longer with you, but I can't, because we're limited by time. That's another enemy that we share. Common enemy is time. But Mr. Johnny Vedmore, have an absolutely epic birthday. Check out a show tonight. I assume you're on because, you know, you have to work birthdays, Christmas, bar mitzvahs and everything else now that you're a member of TNT. So it'll be on tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. UK time. So check them out then. And a big salute to you, Johnny Vedmore. It was lovely to speak to you again.
Thank you for having me on, my friend.
Pleasure. Got to take a break now and then change tack a little bit. I'll be talking to Jane Black from the Glens of Antrim here in Northern Ireland about what's happening in my neck of the woods. So please stay tuned for more here on TNT. Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
This is Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on TNT.
Yes, it never stops here. These shows are absolutely mental in the morning tonight in the best possible way. For me anyway, I'm thoroughly enjoying them because of the people that I'm working with, the people that are listening in, and very importantly, very crucially, the people that I get to talk to on a daily basis. So returning back to TNT Towers again this morning, we have the one and only Jane Black beaming in from the Glens of Antrim. Possibly you will know her from the Twitter or X platform as the girl with no name. But anyway, Jane, welcome back. How are you doing today?
Very good, Rick. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not going to lie. Some mornings I wake up feeling quite flat, feeling quite uninspired. And I don't know what it is. And I'm not just saying this, but when the show goes live, it's like boom, something happens and I get energized and jolted. I don't know what it is. It could be the coffee. Started drinking coffee again in the mornings before the show. Maybe caffeine's what's doing it. What do you reckon?
Caffeine does help. I had a coffee today too. I've been trying to cut out as well because it's not good, but I had a coffee as well. It's hard to
only have one a day.
Just one a day.
How people drink 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 cups of coffee a day, I don't know. I'm buzzing after one in the morning. I'll probably still be hyper into the afternoon. But that all aside, Northern Ireland, the North of Ireland, call it whatever you want. It's all kicking off here at the minute. I suppose we'll have to discuss the events of yesterday. Geoffrey Donaldson, the ex-DUP leader, still the MP for Lagan Valley, down Lisburn neck of the woods. He's over in his bolt hole over in Greenwich or somewhere in London at the minute. His wife, she's holed up in Dromore County Down. They were in Newry Magistrates Court yesterday. Historical sex abuse charges levelled against them. Crazy scenes. Did you see the courtroom footage or the outside the court footage yesterday?
I did see outside the court. Now, I've switched off everything all week because I've been really busy, so I haven't been tuning into really what's going on, but I did see that. Unbelievable. He got really, really badly, like, annihilated it with the public, like, didn't I?
I mean, like, there was a thing as well. I mean, like, he's obviously been in the spotlight for decades now over in Northern Ireland politically, and, you know, member of the Orange Order, and obviously, you know, a fine, upstanding man, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, and his wife, Lady Eleanor. But now it all seems to have come a cropper. But having said that, he still has to go to trial. He's only been accused. He hasn't been found guilty of anything. One of the things that was brought up, Jane, was that if this goes to court, obviously it's something that I would imagine he would want to be done sooner rather than later. But the word on the street is because of the backlog in the legal system in Northern Ireland at the minute after the lockdowns and all the shenanigans with COVID, it could be Christmas of 2025 before this possibly goes to trial, maybe even into 2026, and then it could drag out for a long time. Where do you think that leaves him in the interim period? Because obviously he's over in London at the minute. I think he applied to have his bail conditions relaxed that he could actually speak to his wife again, because they've had to be separated since he was first brought up last month. It's going to be a very odd 18 months for him, I would imagine, where he's in this limbo period where he hasn't been found guilty of anything, but yet there's an awful lot of mud being thrown at him. And of course, a lot of it looks like it's stuck already.
I'm actually really surprised that the mud's even started to be thrown at him. To be honest, I honestly think if you're a sir and you're like a high up MP and you're in the Orange Order, you're almost certainly a Freemason. So the fact that this has even came up, he's 100% a Freemason. He has to be. They all are. The fact that they're throwing all this mud at him, I'm thinking, part of me thinks they've known about this, perhaps, if it is true. They've sat and left it. But I know that Geoffrey Donaldson has been getting into an awful lot of pressure because he wouldn't agree to this Northern Ireland protocol. Part of my suspicion thinks perhaps he's not playing ball. I don't know. So this is why this has come to the forefront. I don't know, but that would be my conspiracy way of thinking why all of a sudden is Geoffrey Donaldson now being thrown to the wolves?
Yeah.
They don't throw them to the wolves unless they play ball.
I don't know if you saw it was about a month, maybe 2 months ago, but he was in Westminster, and he's not exactly what you would known to be a passionate man. So when he speaks very reservedly, very articulately. But there was a speech he gave maybe 2 months ago in Westminster where he talked about how he'd been fighting and the veins in his neck were up and his head almost went purple and he almost broke into tears in Westminster as he was talking. Now, that's the first time I've ever seen Donaldson like that. But what I was thinking, what I'm now thinking is, with the benefit of hindsight, was all this stuff, because, you know, obviously this didn't just happen out of the blue. Could this have been something that was playing up and that was building up to what's been happening now? He almost had a meltdown in Westminster 2 months ago, although he was talking about other things. Do you think possibly it could be all this was just getting on top of him and he was effectively getting ready to be maybe thrown to the wolves?
I did see that speech. Now, I know, like you're saying, Geoffrey Dolan's very calm. He's not a very passionate speaker whatsoever. In fact, he's very quite flat and flight, quite docile. I actually personally, speaking, like the man for his way with regards to Northern Ireland, the way he is. He's very, he wouldn't be a very loyalist anti-Catholic. He wouldn't have that rhetoric. He'd done a brilliant speech in the Students' Union in London. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It was about talking about Northern Ireland, and he classes himself as an Irishman. That's really worth listening to. Mm-hmm. So for him to be like that in that speech in the Houses of Parliament, I couldn't believe it. So when I look back now and I think, why was he so like that? He did. He was very upset, and there he was getting. He's definitely getting an awful lot of pressure to do as he's told and accept that.
Yeah, and of course, like we said, just to have to put the caveat in there, he hasn't been found guilty of anything.
We're
not saying that he's guilty because he has to have his day in court. But at the same time, it's a very, very odd. Yesterday, in particular, watching him coming up to that court, and they had to extend the media spaces because literally everybody was out. He didn't speak a single word. And imagine, you know, him coming back over here, having that day in court over his head. And of course, to talk about this being a historic thing, not that that makes any difference. I believe it's a disservice to the victims to say that they suffered historic abuse. They were abused, period. It doesn't matter if it happened last week, last month, or 10 years ago. And allegedly, this happened over sometime over a 20-year span as well. So it wasn't just a one incident that happened, you know, and then didn't happen again. Apparently, it happened over a 20-year span. And of course, the wife's been implicated as well. So it's thrown politics in Northern Ireland to a degree into disarray, which is the last thing we need right now, Jane, because, you know, Stormont was only just back after pretty much a 2-year layoff. And then, of course, this whole business with Donaldson. Now we have the rise of the Nasty Party. I would call it the Alliance Party. They're an odd bunch, to put it mildly. I want to just talk about what they want to do. They've been pushing for a new RSE, you know, sex education. Education classes in schools, led the charges being led by Kate Nicol, MLA, and she's been getting a lot of flack about this. Where's the parents in all of this? You know, they talk about this teachers, trusted adults, teaching children about sex and closeness and, you know, facilities like abortion services. Where's the parents in all this? The Lance don't mention the parents.
No, it's because it's their agenda they're bringing in. They don't really ask the parents. They just say this is what's happening, either take it or leave it. You know what I'm saying? But most parents will be gullible enough to put their children through that nonsense RSE. I'm sure people are listening now understand what that all is. But that's all to do with the United Nations education system. That's all being put in, implemented everywhere for the very same reasons, you know. But as me as a parent, I would definitely take my child out of that. In fact, if I have a child, my children are both well grown up now. If I had a child right now at school, I would take them out. I would not put my children through it. They're going through an old Soviet-based system with regards to education. Charlotte Eisenberg was a really, really good writer. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She wrote a book called The Dumbing Down of America. Everybody should listen to her work. The education system comes to the United Nations. Every country is receiving it. Now, we're a wee bit late in the game, but since the Bush administration, that's been implemented all around the world. It's literally an education system designed to dumb your children down. They're not taught to think. They're taught to sit in a box, read it and learn at their own pace, no challenge. If you understood the way it's broke down, you would see it. For example, I'll explain this. Most of the mothers here probably, and maybe fathers too, accelerated reader. The children do what's called accelerated reader. It's like a system of where you pick a book and you read at your pace and then you ticked off. It's designed to make your children not think, to read at their leisure without challenge on their own. It's to stop your child from critically thinking. Now that's, if you've been a 70s child, which you are, Rick, we probably escaped that system of education to an extent. It came in after. It's the children after the 70s are the ones that have gone through this education system. So they can't think, but that's how they want them. It's to dumb the brain down. Don't think outside the box. Do as you're told. Follow what you're doing on social media, like you were talking to Johnny earlier. The social media is designed to, like you say, push you to one direction. Herd you down this pathway. Don't go there. Go this way. Yep. Follow the sheeple down the road. You do as you're told. Don't think outside the box. You think outside the box. Johnny thinks out the box because we missed all that. There's a very few children now can do that. But that's why it's the education system.
I really despair now. I'm thank God my daughter is now out of the classic education system. Yeah. She's 18 now. She's well, we took her out of school anyway for the last couple of years, and she'd done her GCSEs, home education. She taught herself basically. Her grades improved when she stopped going to school, so you can make out of that one what you want. But you have this character here, for example, Kate Nicholl. She's responded to the criticism that she's got, and she's put a post up, and this is what she said. These are her own words. This is Kate Nicholl from the Alliance Party in Northern Ireland. Quite a few people are annoyed about my views and many children's organisations that parents shouldn't be able to opt their kids out of RSE. But this doesn't mean parents should not be involved, but not all children live in safe homes. And ultimately, this is the classic spin here. Ultimately, this is about safeguarding. Always. So this issue is being pushed. This is to protect children. This is to keep children safe. This is to enlighten children. But it's not. It's an indoctrination thing. Imagine you were at school. I mean, I can't even begin to comprehend what would have happened if a man came in, a drag queen came in and started telling me, Rick, you might actually be a little girl. You might want to come into school tomorrow, you know, with your hair done in ringlets and, you know, a little frilly dress on. I tell you what would have happened. The locals would have paid him a visit, and he would have probably got one through each kneecap back in the day, 100%. Or if not one in the back of the head. And I'm not advocating violence here, but I'm saying, come 100%. On. Back then it was called grooming, and it was called, perverts being in public places with children. That seems to be almost expected now under the guise of safeguarding.
Well, this is what they want to do. They want to brainwash children into being the way that they don't know what they are. They're just to be a new sex identity, like XX, no Y chromosome. No, do you know what I'm saying? They just want this new identity where it's like, there's no male, there's no female. You're just whatever, one of the same. But it's working because like social media is absolutely fantastic. Like I look at my surroundings, my children's friends, what have you. It's horrific. It's horrific what's happening. My son, out of all of his friends, there's one of them now, like, sorry, he doesn't associate with them now. I'm just going to say that now. He can't deal with it. One of them's now taking HRT. This fella, like, I won't mention his name, obviously.
No.
But 6'2", built like a, he's like a big rocker. He's massive. He's like a freaking rock, like a big rock or long hair, the works. Never in my mind would I have thought that he would believe he's a woman. He now believes he's a woman. But that's the agenda is working so well to push everybody into this nonsensical way of flipping thinking. It's unbelievable. But out of his friends, quite a few of them are just totally messed up.
And here's the thing, right? As an adult, if you turn around to me tomorrow and say, Rick, listen, I've got something to tell you. I'm actually a man. I think I'm a man. I'm going to try and, you know, grow a beard and all that and get big muscles. Yeah. I don't care. You're an adult. You know, if that's what you want to do and it makes you happy and you're not hurting anybody, then you crack on and vice versa. You know, if I decide tomorrow I want to be Rachel, shave and put on a nice wig, you know, if I'm not hurting anybody, I'm not telling you to do it, then why should that be an issue? But the kids, listen, kids are supposed to go back in the day, reading, writing, and arithmetic, a little bit of geography thrown in there. You played football at break time, at dinner time. You might have had a fight after school, you know, and made up with your mates after that. But that was it. That was what school was for, education and not indoctrination. And like I said, you know, I shudder for this generation coming through now when you look at the quagmire of madness that they have to navigate through at schools, introducing climate change, talking about Russia, talking educate why Russia's so evil. It's unbelievable. Let kids be kids. And if they decide, you know, when they're 18 or 19 or 20 or 21, that they might be something else, then let them deal with it at that case. But come on, teaching a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, and why not leave it to the parents? That's the big red flag. Yeah. Leave it to the parents to educate children about sexual matters, not the bloody school or the state. That's just asking for trouble.
Well, in a way, to me, it's like they're traumatizing the child's mind from a very early age. Their trauma and all this trauma is feeding. Like, look at what they've been through, the whole COVID nonsense. All this trauma is feeding through and it's shattering their minds. That's what it is. It's a wee bit like monic programming. And if you're easily programmed, if you're programmed like that way and your thinking isn't the way that it should be as a normal child, you're going to be much easier to control and push towards another agenda. And like the social media, that is a massive computer of manipulation. You were talking about it earlier with Johnny, how you're being led down that path. They are feeding off situations. They get the reaction and then they manipulate more and more and more continually towards the path of their one world goal. That's what they want. And like you were talking about the horses of the apocalypse yesterday, that's total symbolism. This is all, I don't know if I've brought this book in, because I always do this, I always say, like, recommend this to everybody that's listening. Behold the Pale Horse by Bill Cooper. I have the original book. This has the Learner Protocols of Zion in it. Not all of them have it, because that was taken out because it's classed as being anti-Semitic, and apparently it was Russian. I don't know whether that's true or not, but just want to mention that it's, I'm not verifying the protocols that are in here, by the way, because I don't want to do that over TNT. There is an audio of it on a website called BAM, Behold a Messenger. You'll find it online. You might find it on Google. You might get it on the other browsers and what have you. But this tells you where we're going. Behold a messenger, the pale horse is very much significant with regards to that. It's to bring about their one world government with regards to forcing Armageddon, where the people are so terrified that we're going to face Armageddon with war, World War III now with Iran and all the rest of it. And let me tell you, Iran is owned by the same people. That's come out of the WikiLeaks documents years ago.
I don't know if you heard or not, because we've only got a couple of minutes left, but in my editorial in the first hour when I was talking to Gemma about this, it talked about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. But I said, we've seen the white one, we've seen the black one. The black one actually symbolizes famine, but we need to see a red one. And I said, just watch out for the pale horse, because on the pale horse, the rider is called Death, and it said Death and Hell followed after him. I'm getting goose pimples just talking about this here. And
they're going to bring up the book.
Behold a pale horse. So listen, you know, with that said, on that happy note, it's worth saying that you are a very down-to-earth human being. You like to get out there. You like to do homesteading. You like to cook. You like to breathe fresh air up in the beautiful glens of Antrim. So we have to direct people to do the same thing. Don't get too caught up in this. Don't get too tied up about this, because there's not a lot we can actually do about it. Be aware of it, but don't be consumed by it, and make sure you don't lose contact with the real world and all this, because if your mind goes, your body goes afterwards. Get out and get some fresh air. So that's what I'm going to encourage you to do right now, and it sure as hell what I'm going to do right now. And listeners, I don't want to say get out and tune off from TNT. Keep listening, but do it outside. Get some fresh air, get some vitamin D into you. Jane, thank you so much as always for joining me
this
morning.
Lovely talking to you as well, Rick.
It's been a blast. Have a great day up in the glens. I'm off to the North Down Coast to get some fresh air up the sea, and I'll be back again in the morning. Take care, everyone. Have a great day. This is TNT, today's News Talk.